Movie, film, 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 film,
another episode. Thank you. Before we get started, just want to give out a quick message for those who need to hear it. But you matter. You are important. And you are of value. And that's the truth. All right. Now, let's get into movie.
Movie.
Film.
Film. It's a podcast where we pick a flick and decide if it's a movie or a film. I'm Nate, and it's a lovely film, really. And Joaquin, I'm sorry you couldn't be here tonight.
And I'm Terrell. And grab anything that might make a good weapon. Your quote was perfect.
Was yours Pulp Fiction?
No, but I saw this quote and I was just like, if we ever did Pulp Fiction, this would be the perfect quote for that.
I love that scene in Pulp Fiction.
Oh, yeah, it's a great scene where he's just like leveling up.
Yeah, right.
No, this is from Your Next.
Yeah. Still haven't seen that.
I know, I have to show it to you.
It's on my list.
And what's yours from?
That's the guy that's, sorry, off track. That's the guy that's doing the new Saw, Scream movie, right? The Your Next guy?
Yes.
Interesting. So yeah, and even more reason to watch that, mm-hmm. I guess. Mine is from I'm Still Here.
What's that? I'm Still Here.
The Joaquin Phoenix fake documentary where he quits acting to become a rapper.
Oh, okay.
It's a quote from David Letterman in that infamous appearance. That was really the first time that, like, I was like, okay, Joaquin Phoenix is like this tortured artist, mm-hmm. difficult talent guy.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm.
And I'm glad he was not serious and that he's acting again.
Yeah.
In such films as today's You Were Never Really Here.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. He's a star, baby.
Which we will discuss.
Mm-hmm.
You can skip ahead in the episode description. We have the time codes, by mm-hmm. the way. It's been a while since I've reminded people. If you don't like our, for whatever reason, are talking about the movies that aren't the movie that is the title of the episode, you can skip ahead. Or if you want to skip the first one we talk about and hear the second one, it's all there.
It's all there.
It's all there.
Yeah.
You can pick and choose.
Mm-hmm.
What have you watched this week?
I watched a few things. Let's start off with the first thing I watched after Kung Fu Hustle, which was Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Hey.
Yeah, you were talking about it last episode, mm-hmm. and I kept seeing it on my timeline because it's a 10-year anniversary, right. and I follow Edgar Wright. And yeah, still good.
Like, yeah, right?
Still like phenomenal. It was phenomenal when it first appeared.
Yeah.
It's just like something like that. Man, it's just like the transitions in it. It's like,
oh, yeah.
There's such a heavy focus on every line and every frame leading until the next thing. It's beautiful. It's really like perfect. It moves perfectly.
Edgar has a great rhythm to his, to his filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
His films.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's one of those movies with, like, maybe in 2010, not the whole cast was would make you turn your head, but now almost every single person except, and of course I'm forgetting her name, which is indicative of the fact that she's not famous. The girl that plays Knives Chow is, like, the
only
one.
I feel like
one.
Her name is Ellen Wong.
Ellen Wong, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Okay.
Every single other person's like, oh, it's that person.
Yeah, it's Captain America. Oh, it's Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's Michael Cera.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he was
a thing already. Yeah. Superbad had already happened.
I don't know, like, Anna Kendrick's in it for, like, 2 seconds.
Aubrey Plaza.
Yeah. Yeah. Really good, underrated, what's her name? Never mind. She plays Kim in Scott Pilgrim. I forget
One,
that
One, two, actress. Three, four.
Allison Pill.
We're sex bombing. We're here to sell out and stuff. Yeah. Yeah, no, she's great.
Really good.
Yeah.
She's an underrated actress out that Allison Pill.
Mm-hmm.
Anywho. Yeah, I like that movie.
Me too.
I watched a documentary that just came out last week on Apple TV Plus, which is a subscription I only have because the computer I bought, it gave me a year of Apple TV Plus.
Nice.
So I got to watch Boys State. It's a Boys State is a program that the American Legion holds in most states in the United States, where for like a week or a couple days, I don't know. They have one for boys, one for girls. Boys State is for boys to participate in like a mock election. Go to like, I guess the goal is to get the future kids that are going to be politicians or lobbyists to get started. Like the movie starts with like pictures of Bill Clinton and George W. Bush and all the notable alums of Boys State. And this one followed the 2018 Texas Boys State, and it is a shit show. Politics is dirty.
Yes.
And childish. And this is a child version of that, with only teenage boys, and things get nasty, and it's... Politics have often been compared to a circus, and I don't think that metaphor has been more true than in this case, because it's there's a lot of things that draw your attention and draw you in and you want to watch, but also it's like kind of nauseating.
Yeah.
It's, so Boys State is a circus. And the just the documentary filmmaking is really good. In so few political or like campaign movies, you get both sides, like both opponents. But they had complete access to the whole program, and the characters they or human beings they chose to focus on were well thought out and have satisfying arcs.
Interesting. It sounds interesting. You made it sound really
interesting. Yeah, I really liked it and hated it.
Yeah.
It's one of those.
Okay. Boys State. I watched Black is King again just so that I could show my mother. I have nothing to say about it more than I already saw.
You didn't like
it's very
You
very
mentioned lush. Last time that you didn't pay attention to the story. Did you like try to piece together narrative this time?
Yeah, yeah. I followed the story. It's the story of Lion King.
Yeah.
It is. It is. It's just like her eye on it. So you get the whole, you know, Scar sends him away and Hakuna Matata number as Mood Forever. It's really nice that she was just like, how can I interpret this and then put my spin on it, you know? But I also watched The Power Project.
Project Power?
Project Power.
I didn't watch it. It's that Netflix. If you're listening to this, you probably know it. Netflix has been pushing it on everyone's the Jamie Foxx. JGL, New Orleans.
Yeah, they have a heavy cyber promo team because it's everywhere.
Yep. Just for like a week, though, it'll be completely disappeared.
And, yeah.
Like, remember Extraction?
What?
Chris, it was like a Chris Hemsworth Netflix movie from like 2 or 3 months ago.
That, I do not remember that. Yeah. It's crazy. I only watched this because someone put it on. And kind of,
I was curious about it when I saw you log it on Letterboxd.
Yeah,
I was like, he chose this.
Yeah, I didn't be like, ooh, put this on. Somebody put it on, and then I was just like, okay, well, I guess I'll watch it. So I watched it. There's some pretty cool stuff in there. It's a pretty cool. I thought it was gonna be like Limitless. I thought it was gonna be a pill that just gave you like, you know, advanced mental powers and strength, and but no, it was a little different, and it was a bit like it played with like body horror, you know what I mean? And there were like consequences to the power, and
you make it sound interesting.
I know I'm making it sound real.
I did watch the first 5 minutes and was like, nah,
because there is some cool stuff that happens in it, but I think.
I didn't even get to Jamie Foxx.
That Jamie Foxx is really good.
He's really good. Joseph Gordon-Levitt looked like he was doing a character, too.
Yeah, he's really good, too. I mean, all the trio that they picked, really good. They really carry the movie, you know? I think without that level of talent that they displayed, that it would just have been worse than it was. It was okay. It kind of... fell flat, maybe because the story that they decided to tell was really generic. really generic story.
That's a Netflix movie. Well, and I guess Netflix has different
movies. Netflix does have a formula, or just have like their idea of what a thriller is, or what like whatever like mystical supernatural.
They've got so much data to draw from.
Yeah. It kind of reminded me of something else they did. They did Bright. Kind of reminded me of Bright. But yeah, I mean, it was fine. I just want to, I guess I'll just point out, like, it was just like the writer wrote a line in the movie that made me look to see who wrote it. Because when I heard it, I said, did a black person write this?
Did a black person write it?
No, a black person did not write it. And so it threw me off because I'm like, well, it's not that black people don't talk like this.
Do you remember the line?
Yeah, the line is Jamie Foxx says to the girl, he says, you're from the hood, but you're smart.
Oh.
And that line kind of becomes a critique of like hood culture or people from hooded areas that I don't think that the movie was able to answer or reflect upon, you know what I mean? And so I was just kind of like, well, is that what he thinks about people from that area? You know, like, I'm like just thinking about it more than I guess I would in like the past 5 years or so, you know, become more critical of the way we're being represented on screen and who's writing these lines. It's important. Like, it was a throwaway line.
See, if the Joseph Gordon-Levitt character said that, that would, like, expose his biases and I don't know, I haven't seen the movie, but, like, that could inform, I know he plays a cop, so that could inform something, but I don't know who Jamie Foxx is in the movie.
I don't think
it seems weird.
Yeah, it seems weird. If you watch it, when you see it, and you see Jamie Foxx's character, you're gonna be like, why would he say that? Why wouldn't he just say, oh, you're smart?
Right.
Right. You know what I mean? But yeah, it was just that one thing that kind of was just like, left a bad taste in my mouth. But other than that, the movie is just like, it's mid. Cool effects and stuff. So
got you to keep your Netflix subscription for another month.
Yeah. The one I don't pay for.
I watched because another Netflix movie coming out in 2 weeks. But not like one of their formulaic action movies. Netflix is distributing the new Charlie Kaufman movie. I'm thinking of Ending Things in a couple weeks. And so they recently put a couple of his stuff up on the service. So I rewatched Being John Malkovich.
I saw that.
For the first time.
I wanted to watch that.
Yeah. This was the first movie I saw that has John Malkovich in it. And it was such a weird introduction to John Malkovich. Right? I have since been exposed to much more of his work. Shout out to his performance of True West with Gary Sinise. I saw the one where which one was it? They'd switch roles in that play. I saw the one where Malkovich was like the unhinged guy. Anywho, it's also, I think, other than like maybe Shrek, my favorite Cameron Diaz performance. She doesn't do roles like this.
No. But she can.
She did it here.
Yeah.
There's other times where she takes a dramatic role that...
Like Vanilla Sky.
Takes away. Yeah, well, that movie's a mess all around. And she's definitely part of that.
Okay.
And also, I don't like Gangs of New York very much. And not to blame Cameron Diaz for that, but... Also, she was acting the opposite. One of the greatest actors... One of the people widely regarded as the greatest actors.
John Cusack?
No, in Gangs of New York.
Daniel
Day-Lewis. And Leo DiCap. Anywho, being John Malkovich, I don't think anyone's like John Cusack is the greatest actor. But he does a good job in this movie, just being a term that, not in 1999, wasn't around in 1999 when this was released, but he's definitely a soy boy beta cuck. And I forgot how queer being John Malkovich is, and the queer romance on the sidelines of that movie. And Catherine Keener is a goddess in everything.
Nice.
And yeah, I mean, such after interesting... having not seen it in a while, there are definitely parts of it I forgot.
Mm-hmm.
And also, having seen a couple movies in the last few years that have been strongly influenced by this, it was interesting to go back and see some of those elements.
Yeah. It's a really interesting concept for a movie.
It's I always so wondered, bizarre.
Like, why John Malkovich? Like, why him?
Yeah.
It's like, what about his persona at that time, or like the movies that he were doing at that time, or you know exactly how did that come to
be? Well, if it was like being Leonardo DiCaprio, then it would just be you're just fucking young models. But like with John Malkovich, you get to be him, and then you're like just reading the newspaper, eating toast,
right?
There's another movie I watched that I will hopefully remember to discuss next week, because I think it fits in nicely with next week's movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I will not talk about that. Did you have anything else?
No, I didn't.
All right. I just want to complain briefly about an experience I had watching a movie the other day. And it's partly my fault, because I watched that documentary Disclosure last month, mm-hmm. 2 months ago, about trans representation in the media. And they did go over the ending to this movie from 1991, Soap Dish, but mm-hmm. I'd completely forgotten about it.
Okay.
And maybe because I heard about it in that movie, I then saw that Soap Dish was available on Amazon and was like, oh yeah, Soap Dish, I meant to watch that. And then like a third of the way into the movie, I was like, oh, this is where they're going with this, isn't it? And it's like very, pretty transphobic.
Yeah.
But it's also like super campy. And there's a lot of things I liked a lot about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Sally Field is just incredible. Whoopi Goldberg's there. She's never bad.
Wait, there's a Whoopi Goldberg, Sally Fields movie?
Yeah. And unfortunately, the very end of it is just super transphobic and unnecessary.
Oh, man.
And then they just leave it there. So I couldn't give it a heart on Letterboxd, even though there was a lot of stuff I liked about it.
Right.
Robert Downey Jr. is in there
too. Yeah, I'm looking at the poster now.
Yeah, it's outrageous.
And campy.
They should remake it. And yeah, I'll say this a lot about a lot of movies, but they...
This would be a good one to remake and, like, fix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. They just make the trans woman the villain and then, like, out her at the end. Spoiler. And,
oh, yeah.
And it's like, oh, because you're trans, that means you're not valid as a human being.
Right. Sounds then, like...
So now we all know this person's not valid as a human being. Movie over.
Right. Sounds like...
Ace Ventura?
Yeah.
It reminded me of... I was watching this. Yeah. I was like, yeah, I'm not going to go and rewatch Ace Ventura, but I kind of wish I remembered not to watch this, because Ace Ventura has lots of funny stuff in it.
Yeah, it has a lot of funny stuff.
But then by the end of it, it's like, oh, this is nasty.
Yeah.
And just mean.
Yeah.
That's it, though.
Yeah.
Also, rewatched Chris Rock's last Netflix special, Tambourine.
I never watched it.
That's pretty good.
I never watched any of his specials, so...
Oh, well, what's special about this special is that he departs from his usual just, like, cultural observations and mm-hmm. gets more personal, talks about his porn addiction and divorce.
Okay, interesting.
And also some bad political takes that I hope are just for humor, but also it makes sense that he's super rich and out of touch.
Right.
But he thinks we should be paying police more money.
Wow.
He thinks that's the ha-ha. Answer.
Ha-ha.
Also that they should kill more white kids.
Ha-ha.
Okay.
All right, yeah, that's all I've seen.
All right, let's do it.
Yeah.
It was going to be Blowout this week.
It was.
As discussed last week, you didn't share my excitement for it.
Yeah, it didn't happen.
So I went back, I picked another movie with corrupt politicians.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate it.
And this kind of goes better, though I kind of wanted an older movie with Support the Girls being more recent. Mm-hmm. But this goes with that in that Support the Girls is written and directed by a man, and it's notes on femininity, mm-hmm. and this is adapted and directed by a woman and seems to deal in part with masculinity.
Mm. Nice.
Not that any of that was planned. Right. Just an observation. You found a way. But let's hear the trailer for You Were Never Really Here.
I'm going to ask you some questions. How many are there?
One guy inside the front door. Second guy on the top floor.
After the tone, please leave a message.
It's done. Man called. He wants to see you right away.
State Senator Albert Vatto. His teenage daughter's missing.
What's the lead?
He got an anonymous text with an address.
I've heard of these places. They said you were brutal.
I can be.
I want you to hurt them.
Here is a 2017 psychological thriller written and directed by Lynn Ramsey based on the 2013 novella of the same name by Jonathan Ames. I did read this novella before the movie came out, partly in anticipation for the movie, partly because I was reading everything Jonathan Ames wrote because I was a fan of his TV series Bored to Death, and then I got into his books. This is so unlike anything else he does. He's usually like very whimsical and neurotic. And this is hard-boiled and tense.
Yeah.
And not a lot of comedy.
No comedy.
There's some moments that make you smile, but it's not played for laughs at all. I saw this in the theater with our friend and occasional podcast guest, Anthony.
Hey, Anthony.
Yeah.
I know you're listening to this
one. We had a great time.
Yeah. Yeah, I knew about this movie because of Anthony. Because he kept talking about it. He's a walking guy, so...
You watched it for the first time with me, though, right?
Yeah.
Or had you seen... Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So he talked about it, but he wasn't able to get you to watch
it? Yeah, he wasn't able to get me to watch it.
Man. Like,
you got me to watch it.
Yeah, a couple years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And, it's really good. I really
Yeah, you had the reaction to this that I had hoped you would have had from Blowout.
Yeah. This one delivered for me. It really got that, made me react that way to it. I mean, I looking at the trailer, I knew it was going to be good, but I wasn't as excited about it as like you guys were.
You also didn't like We Need to Talk About Kevin, which was Lynn Ramsey's.
Yes, yeah, I didn't. Wasn't a fan of that.
Yeah.
But this one, yeah, makes up for that one.
Okay.
Definitely.
I meant to watch more Vern Collar, which is on Amazon Prime, another earlier work of Lynn Ramsey before this podcast, but I forgot to. So I might bring it up on a future episode. You Were Never Really Here begins with not your usual production logo studio sounds. They were able to do their own thing and get the audio from the movie to play during the opening, so you get like muffled sounds of like traffic and like this loud ringing.
Yeah,
a couple different cacophony of sounds.
Yeah.
Among them a young girl whispering counting down. a man violently talking about sex.
That's what was happening.
Yeah.
Okay. I couldn't hear everything exactly.
Maybe in the act of violent sex.
Right.
And we get a second counting voice, this time a man counting up.
Mm-hmm.
The sound design in this movie, I know I went on the whole rant with Kung Fu Hustle about sound, but it continues this week because mm-hmm. it's definitely notable in a movie with not a lot of dialogue,
mm-hmm.
a very quiet protagonist that we stick with the entire time.
Yeah.
A lot of storytelling is achieved through the sound.
Yeah.
A lot of information conveyed just from visuals and sound.
Mm-hmm. And what was really cool about this watch is that we watched it with headphones. And
yeah.
So we could really hear our
projector we watch on is loud.
Yeah, it's pretty loud. It's an old one.
Figured out a way with plugging in my PlayStation, we can each have our own headphones.
Mm-hmm. And I was really able to appreciate the scoring of this
yeah, picture. Yeah, Johnny Greenwood of Radiohead fame.
And just how odd it was, and just how, like, noise it was.
Yeah.
And, like, how choppy it got. And it had lag to it. You know, it was certain things about the sound that I noticed this time because it was right in my ear.
Yeah.
You know, that I didn't catch the first time. Where I was just like, oh, wow. This sound is perfect for what this character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's perfect for this character.
Yeah. So the first thing we see is a close-up on Joe, who's Joaquin Phoenix's character's
mm-hmm.
head inside a plastic bag,
yeah.
trying to gasp for air.
Mm-hmm.
It is a haunting image of, like, the plastic, like, being, like, concave inside his mouth.
Yeah.
And it, right off the bat, our protagonist has some issues going on.
Yeah, it's a thing.
Seemingly very suicidal.
Mm-hmm.
We also get our first super, super quick flash of PTSD. He
mm-hmm.
is suffering. So we just see, like, a very quick flash of, like, this young boy who we learn more, only a little bit more about later.
Mm-hmm.
Then
he's doing something, right? Like, he's just like, he's done something. He's cleaning up.
Yeah, he's in a hotel room.
He's in a hotel room.
The first thing he does is he burns a Polaroid photo of mm-hmm. a young girl in a hotel ice bucket.
Mm-hmm.
All this is just, like, quick shots, extreme close-ups. We haven't really seen Joe's face yet.
No.
Just, like, through the plastic bag at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
He flushes bloody rags down the toilet. We see a necklace that says Sandy
mm-hmm.
On the bed. He spreads out his supplies. He's got zip ties and duct tape
yeah.
and a ball peen hammer. He shoves all that into a trash bag. Treks out in the hallway. Sees mm-hmm. a woman walking down. So he waits a second.
Mm-hmm.
Then exits. When he starts walking, that's when the score begins.
Yeah. And then he exits out into the alleyway. And he's attacked.
Yeah, the alarm goes off because he went through the emergency exit.
Yeah. It seems like, was the guy trying to mug him or something? Or, like, was it just, like, random?
No, I think it, well, I know because I read
okay.
the original text. It was related to the job he had just completed.
Okay. I was like, it's so, like, random. As soon as he walked out, he got attacked.
Mm-hmm.
And then all he did was, like, punch the guy.
Joe very easily takes
yeah,
down
very
the guy.
Easily and just keeps it moving.
Mm-hmm.
Then like just that, like, guy picked the wrong
guy. He, like,
guy.
Looks for a moment, like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And then just keeps walking. And the score, like, stops and starts a bit during this part. And
mm-hmm.
it's, like, just following the momentum. He mm-hmm. very quickly hails a cab.
Mm-hmm.
All he says, I guess the first word of the movie, he just says, airport.
Yeah.
And the cab is off. We see a shot of the outside of the cab that reveals that he was in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm. He gets to the airport, makes a phone call
the airport in the cab ride. It must be mentioned the title card of the movie.
Okay.
The cabbie is singing. The score is still playing though. You don't hear the music that the cabbie's listening to, just like singing along, and it's mixed in with the score, which is like this pulsating, kind of like dirty sounding synthesizers.
Mm-hmm.
And as the text comes on the screen, one word at a time, each word disappearing. When the next one comes on, you were never really here.
Mm-hmm.
The cabbie is lip syncing those words.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. It's like, it's a shot like through the rear view mirror. You just see his mouth and he's mouthing, "You were never really here." And it's, that's like when I first saw
that's
that.
Another detail.
That's how you know you're in good hands, that this movie just does shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets to the airport.
Right, he gets to the airport. He uses a payphone. What's that? A payphone? He uses a payphone and leaves a really quick voicemail
saying,
they
still have those at the airport.
It's done.
Yep. All he says is it's done. Hangs up quickly. We see the guy waxing the floor and then Joe drinking out of the water fountain, and then we get a wide shot of the guy waxing the floor, and we still hear the water fountain running, but when the camera pans over,
mm-hmm.
Joe's not there.
Yeah.
Maybe he was never really there.
Maybe.
He gets home.
Yeah. He lives with his mom.
Yeah, he gets in through the side entrance, mm-hmm. through an alley, and he hears some kids outside on a nearby fire escape smoking,
mm-hmm.
and one of them tells the other kid, "Come on, let's go inside. We got to go."
Because
right. Joaquin looks up and then, or Joe looks up and then just takes note and enters his house.
Right. This is the first bit of...
This is funny. This is a funny part.
Yeah. It's the first bit of connection that we can make to him, because he's mm-hmm. kind of been distant. Right. Yeah. We haven't really seen him or made a connection to him. And if he is the guy that we think he is, then he's a bad guy. Right. But I feel like this moment lets us connect with him because it's relatable. He cares for his mother.
Yeah. When he gets home, his mom is seemingly asleep in mm-hmm. front of the TV. Joe wakes her up thinking he's waking her up. But
yeah.
It was a joke. She was pretending to be asleep.
Mm-hmm. She has a good laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Psycho's on.
Mm-hmm.
She was watching Psycho. It's just funny.
Yeah, she was scared sitting alone watching Psycho.
Yeah.
And then Joe mimics the famous knife scene. Yeah.
Yeah.
The stabbing.
Mm-hmm.
And he puts his mom to bed, and mm-hmm. she urges him to spend a little time with her mm-hmm. before.
Yeah.
And then cut to daytime. Yeah. Frozen peas on his shoulder where he was attacked.
Yeah,
in Cincinnati.
He's moving his arm around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we get some nice, quiet, alone moments with
just
him.
Sitting on the bed, breathing.
Mm-hmm.
Then another flash.
Yeah.
Flashback. Very quick. Hard to tell what that one is. But the movie, the color palette is very, greenish, bluish.
Mm-hmm.
And then the flashbacks often are yellowy orange. So mm-hmm. It's a jolt whenever they appear.
Yeah.
And the character is seemingly haunted by these flashes.
Yeah. Kind of like PTSD. You can see him playing around with the knife.
Right. He's lying on his bed on his back, holding a knife above his head.
Yeah.
Almost threatening to drop it on his face.
Yeah. And he is taking care of his mom.
Yeah, and while he's doing that, his mom calls for help. And I think that's a really good illustration of, this guy's clearly suicidal,
mm-hmm.
but it shows, he would have dropped a knife on his face if his mom didn't call him for help. He's
right.
staying around because he cares for his elderly mother.
Yeah.
She made a mess in the bathroom from showering, got water everywhere.
Yeah. So he has to clean up after her.
Yeah, I love the shots of him doing that. It's the shallow focus, close up on the towel, just sopping up all the water.
Mm-hmm.
But he's just kind of spreading water around. We never really see the finished product of the bathroom being mm-hmm. clean and dry. It's just kind of a wet mess
right. That
he's just moving around in.
Next scene is he goes to a bodega, goes straight to the back. We meet this guy named Angel. I guess that's who he was doing business with in the first scene, was happening
it's
there. It's his bank, okay.
Yeah, because Angel, when he gets in the bodega, he passes the kid from the night before
mm-hmm.
that was on the fire escape, and the kid was stacking cans, mm-hmm. inventory, and he sees Joe and kind of is a little clumsy, is thrown off,
maybe
scared,
mm-hmm.
and then he follows Angel to the back office, who grabs some cash out of the drop ceiling. Because if you got a lot of cash, that's where you keep it.
Yeah.
In the drop ceiling.
Out of the banks.
Off the books. Gives it to Joe. Joe gives a couple bills to Angel, I guess as a tip or as for his services.
Mm-hmm.
Angel states that, just says he wants to see you. We don't know who yet.
Mm-hmm.
Joe doesn't follow up with that question, because often with conversations, he has one thing on his mind, even though other people are trying to talk about something else. He just brings up his encounter with Angel's son the night before. He asks if his son told him where he was.
Yeah.
Did your son tell you that he saw me? Does he know where I live now?
Mm-hmm.
And Angel's telling him not to worry about it. But Joe is very careful and needs to stop using Angel as his bank.
Yeah.
So he gives Angel a couple more bills as like severance pay, I guess.
Yeah, pretty much. This is it. That seems a little scary.
Yeah.
Just because you're just like, you don't know too much about him. You know, you get the feeling that he's dangerous. And it kind of seems like he would kill this guy's kid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But he doesn't have to do that.
No.
No.
Now he's polishing silverware with his mom.
Mm-hmm.
Another moment of quiet. They're like singing to each other.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that song is. It's like the alphabet, but a love song. I don't know.
Me either.
He goes through her fridge, notices that she's keeping a lot of expired stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like him.
Yeah. He said the sour cream is from 1972.
Yeah.
She said, shut up. I'm using it.
Yeah, right.
Put it back.
And then she asks how Janice is.
Yeah.
Who's Janice? It is Joe's girlfriend from 20 years ago.
20 years ago.
Joe says, you mean my girlfriend from 20 years ago? And Joe's mom says, she would have been a good mother.
Yeah. Of course, she wants grandchildren.
Yep. Sets off a more substantial PTSD flash.
Yeah. He actually...
some screams.
He goes into the closet, mm-hmm. and he sticks his head inside of like one of those plastic...
like dry cleaning.
Yeah, plastic. Dry cleaning bags.
Yeah.
And does that thing that we saw him doing at the beginning of the movie.
Suffocating himself.
Suffocating himself. And I'm like, does he have like an asphyxiation problem? Or is it like, does he want to kill himself? You don't know exactly what this coping mechanism is.
He's not masturbating.
But like, still, just like having a lack of air can like stimulate you.
Hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know exactly what it is yet. But
he brings himself right to the edge.
Yeah. And then he hears a scream
right
from the past, and then he's snapped out of it.
Mm-hmm. Next thing I have, he's going into the city. This mm-hmm. movie, it just moves along.
Yeah, it just keeps moving.
It's only 89 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
We may spend 89 minutes or more discussing it, though, because there's just so much detail in so little time.
Mm-hmm.
It's very taut.
It's a very tight movie.
Yeah. So Joe's going into the city to see his guy.
Mm-hmm.
This guy that gives him jobs. There's a shot of him waiting for the train. And the camera is on the opposite side of the train platform as Joe.
Mm-hmm.
So when a train passes by, we just see like flashes of Joe. Mm-hmm. And then like at the end for like a split second, he like kind of disappears. But then the scene cuts.
Mm-hmm.
And just the city noises in this movie are just up to 100. Like usually you get like some chattering and the sound of traffic in like a New York movie. But you very mm-hmm. clearly hear what people are saying in this.
Yeah.
It's just very loud, like banging, like construction, ambulances,
mm-hmm.
Lots like of different people talking.
Yeah.
And at times it even gets louder than that,
mm-hmm.
just to put us in Joe's head. So he goes to McCleary's office. McCleary
yep.
is the guy that gives him jobs.
Yeah.
His office is filled with flowers,
mm-hmm.
which we learn are thank yous from the parents of the young girl that Joe rescued.
Yeah.
McCleary doesn't appreciate the flowers, though. He notes how they all just die.
And smell bad.
And smell bad.
Yeah.
So, can't have anything nice in this movie world. Mm-hmm. And we learn about a new job.
Yeah.
State Senator Votto.
Yeah.
It's a new client whose wife killed herself years ago, and teenage daughter ran away from has been running away from home since.
Yes.
That's the story.
Mm-hmm.
We do see that McCleary keeps like a Rolodex.
Yeah.
Like old school to keep everyone's information, and Joe instructs him to lose Angel's entry and that he needs to find a new bank.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe isn't really holding conversation.
No. He's just paying attention to what he needs to. Like, he hears the job, mm-hmm. but then John goes to talk about...
His boat,
and he's like, huh?
Yeah.
By the end of it?
Which is a big red flag if a side character in this kind of movie is talking about having a boat and going out on the sea and how he can't wait to, like... be done with this shit.
Yeah, retirement is a big red flag.
I mean, yeah, this isn't quite retirement, but it is. Like he says, oh, if we get money from this, I'll be able to take Josephine 2 from the dock.
Yeah.
And then he invites Joe to like have cold beer and steaks on the boat, but Joe just says, what?
Yeah.
He says, what? And then that's the end of that scene. But just one detail I want to go over is just the jelly beans.
Yeah, it's a green jelly bean that he crushes.
McCleary has a bowl of jelly beans in his office. Joe takes a handful while McCleary's talking to him. Joe is kind of lying down on the couch like someone in a like a cartoon of a therapy session.
Mm-hmm.
Like old school psychoanalysis, lying down on your back.
Yeah.
And he's complaining that there aren't a lot of green jelly beans. He says he likes green. And then we get a close-up at one point. He has a green jelly bean, the one he says he likes the best.
Yeah.
And he's crushing it between his two fingers, and it's like the super close-up on just the destruction.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
So he meets with Votto.
Yes. Says he got an anonymous text of an address where his daughter is.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is Joe's job to retrieve his daughter and also hurt them.
Yeah, he wants them to hurt them. It's the way that that Phoenix delivers this line. Votto asks him, I heard you can be brutal. Mm-hmm. He goes, I can be.
Yeah.
And the way he says it is like, not only can I like be brutal to like, it's almost like, it almost feels like a threat to everyone. To right. like Votto and to like us. Like he's not on anyone's side. He just has this very quiet, threatening presence. And there's this moment where he stands up above Votto and he's just like not saying anything at the end of the meeting. And you're just like, well, what now?
No, he's just in it for the money to support his mom.
Mm-hmm.
He gets a Polaroid of Votto's daughter, Nina Votto.
Mm-hmm.
And, no, because we saw in the very beginning him burning a Polaroid of a girl. We know this is the next girl that he rescues.
Mm-hmm.
There's never like a line where it's like, hi, my name is... Not that movies actually have it like this.
Right.
But there's never like, hi, my name is Joe. And what I do for my job is I rescue girls from brothels for money.
Yeah.
But we just like... At this point, it's like, oh, this is what he does.
I was like, when you were saying that, I'm like, what movie says that? And I was just like, Taken.
This is like the artsy version of Taken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He doesn't need to say it. He just does it.
He never says, I have a very particular set of skills. We just see what his skill set is through the movie.
Mm-hmm. So he goes out and he buys his
Oh wait, before he goes out they make the Joe states a hotel room, a specific hotel to meet at 3 a.m.
mm-hmm.
that to give Votto his daughter back.
Okay. So Joe goes out and we see him buying tape and you see him buying that hammer.
Ball peen hammer.
It's like this really long lingering shot on the hammer.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it so dangerous. Because you know what it's going to be used for.
Construction?
There's a few tourists that ask him to take a picture.
Love this part.
So he's taking the picture of the tourists who, you know, seem very happy.
They're teen girls.
Yeah. And it's something the movie does because it's placing us in his head, mm-hmm. where it takes that joy, that happiness, and it turns it into like fear, where it almost looks like they're screaming.
Yeah, it's like while Joe is taking their picture on one of their phones, mm-hmm. it's a close-up of like, I guess their smiling faces, mm-hmm. but with the way the sound is and like it slows, I guess the picture slows down a little bit maybe, mm-hmm. and you just see the close-up of the mouths and the eyes of these teen girls. They appear to be in an immense pain.
Yeah.
And it looks like they're all suffering. Mm-hmm. And that is apparently all Joaquin sees when he sees young women.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll learn about something from his past to cause that.
All right.
This whole time he's like getting the supplies and doing this stuff. That's when the score really gets going again. And it's like building the momentum. Mm-hmm. He's getting ready. But he's got time because he's waiting for late at night to strike. So to save time, he like sleeps in public. Mm-hmm. Just like leaning against just like a street lamp or something. Mm-hmm. Telephone pole.
Yeah.
And he has a couple PTSD flashes and gets some pills.
Oh, yeah. Okay, it was up until this point. I remember the first time I was watching it where I was, like, starting to, like him mm-hmm. as a person. And then he punches his dealer. And then I was like, why the hell would he do that?
We see Joe waiting outside, like, in the stairwell of an apartment. And mm-hmm. then the guy, the dealer, comes up the stairs. And Joe says, why'd you make me wait? And the guy says, chill.
Yeah.
Guy gives him the drugs. Joe gives the guy the money and then hits him and says, don't make me wait.
Don't make me wait.
See, if he was a completely bad guy, he would have just used violence instead of giving the guy money. Mm-hmm. He still gives the guy money.
He still gives the guy money, but it's a reminder that he is a bad guy. Mm-hmm. You know, it kind of snaps you back into like who he is because you had those humanizing moments with him earlier. And you're like, oh yeah, he is a killer.
Yep.
Yeah.
One of the things he did in that like montage of stuff getting ready is he got a rental car. So now he's in the car mm-hmm. and he's taking his supplies out of a plastic bag. Mm-hmm. I think we've seen those before.
Yeah.
Among them, some waters and sodas. Mm-hmm. And then he goes to a sauna.
Yeah. Very blue sauna.
I wrote heavy blue light.
Yeah. Nice blue sauna. Nice lighting.
Well, it's because they're going to contrast that with very yellow, orange flashbacks while he's in the sauna. Mm-hmm. We didn't mention Joe's like physical appearance. He's a big guy.
Yeah.
It's not the skinny Joaquin we saw last year in Joker.
Yeah, Joker. Yeah, he went from very stocky in this movie to very like skinny mm-hmm. and frail and for the Joker.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got a giant beard with mm-hmm. a lot of white hair in it. Also, he just dresses like a construction worker, mm-hmm. which kind of makes a hammer make sense. He just wears like nondescript jeans, a dark hoodie, always with the hood up, mm-hmm. Boots, like work boots, just blending in.
Yeah.
But in the sauna, I just brought up his beard because what he does is he puts the towel over his head.
Yeah.
In a sauna with a bunch of hair and beard hair and stuff. Yeah. Like, that's the extreme.
Yeah.
But he's doing some deep breathing. Mm-hmm. It seems he's enjoying himself.
He's loosening up. You know what I mean? He's really loosening up before the job.
And now we get our longest PTSD flash back up to this point. The couple of striking images. This soundtracked by whatever music is playing on like a radio. Mm-hmm. And we see two soldiers in the desert from the book. I can tell you it's Iraq.
Okay.
They're like slow dancing to the music. Mm-hmm. And then you see like a civilian and Joe gives him candy.
Yeah.
And then another guy shoots that guy.
Yeah. Was it a kid?
Yeah.
He gave it to a kid and then another kid shot that kid mm-hmm. and then took the candy.
Yeah. And we just get close-ups. This is like an image we saw in some of the earlier flashbacks, but it was just out of context of this foot in the sand. But now we see the kid was shot and his foot is, he's just writhing.
Yeah, he's dying.
And the foot is just moving in the sand. Mm-hmm. Just the way that, just body parts in this movie, just separating them from the whole body. Mm-hmm. When you get like a close up, when you don't really see a character except for one part of their body, it really changes
what it can they change, are. Yeah,
like
it can
they're change not, the it's not really a character. It's more a point about Joe's mental state and how he sees people.
Yeah, you see a foot in the sand in the beginning, you think it maybe is just someone on a beach chilling, but then you realize that they're not kind of like stretching out, they're dying. Like that little jump kick they did there is like their last kick of life.
Yeah.
There's also a flashback to a truck full of dead people.
That's later.
That's later? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's at the stakeout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now, all sweaty, ready to go. Joe drives around the city. It's very, a lot of stuff in this movie can be compared to Taxi Driver. This ride around the city, definitely just, looking out the window and seeing, you don't get the voiceover of, I don't think Joe keeps a diary like Travis Bickle, but, it wouldn't be completely out of place of monologue about all the filth and disgust and
that's crazy. Yeah,
and also like the whole rescuing a young girl from sexual exploitation.
It is very Taxi. Yeah. I don't know if I picked that up, but it is like heavy.
And then Joker being a big Taxi Driver thing.
Yeah,
you can then draw the line from this to Joker, and there's like a lot. There's a lot there. This I like better, though. Okay, so now he's staking out. Staking out the brothel.
Yeah.
I love this one small moment. He's just smoking a cigarette in the car waiting. He turns the radio on, and it's like the radio station tag. And then a disc jockey saying, just setting up like the next song, which he says, "And now, Bon Jovi, Living on a Prayer." And then it cuts to like the next part, because like, we don't hear Bon Jovi in it. He just kind of like this setup.
Living on a Prayer.
There's a lot of stuff in this movie where they show like a small part of something that just implies this much larger thing that's happening. This is a very small example of that just in the editing where, you know, he then sat there and listened to shitty, I mean, no offense to John Bon Jovi, but just like radio music.
Until he was ready to strike.
Now, this is where we get the flashback of dead women in a shipping container.
Right.
This was from, I am, of course, bringing some information from the novella. Yeah. This is after he was a soldier. He was in the FBI and part of some raids to take down sex trafficking.
Okay.
Should be noted that earlier, McCleary is played by John Doman, who was in The Wire, another...
That's body of work
with dead women in a shipping container.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He has a lot of things to be traumatized by.
Yes.
Not just like his childhood, but just like his life.
We haven't even gotten to the brunt of his childhood trauma yet. Not so yet. Far, it's just his professional.
So while he's staking out, he gets out to talk to someone. We don't see who it is. We just see him leave the back door open. And he's just asking this person a question. And then you see him throw him into the back seat.
Well, we saw like in the mirror, I think it was. Like one of the side view mirrors. He saw the guy walk out of the brothel. So, yeah. Joe grabs him. Throws him in the car. First thing he does. It's like he's done this 1,000 times and he has a routine.
Yeah.
Because, like, he has no patience for when this guy, like, starts pleading for his life.
Yeah.
He just wants to get the information he needs.
And then the guy doesn't want to die.
So what he does first is he asks the guy his name. The guy says, Scott. In this part, he says, "I'm Mr. Rogers." I just learned this from the Wikipedia. In France and Germany, the title of the movie is A Beautiful Day. Which, of course, Mr. Rogers saying it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And is seen by many as like this really pure presence, especially appealing to children and to childhood innocence.
Right.
But for Joe to take on that
persona,
that persona,
and be violent.
So he's asking Scott about the security of this place, how many security guards there are. And he says, where's the playground?
Yeah.
Which we learn is what they call where they keep the underage girls.
Yeah.
Or underage people.
Mm-hmm.
It's the third floor. And Joe asks for the code to the front door before giving it. Scott pleads for his life.
Yeah.
Joe's not really hearing it.
Yeah, he's just like, give me the code.
So he hits him.
Yeah.
And he gets the code. And he pretty gently puts Scott to sleep.
Yeah, he puts him to sleep and tapes him up. Like a
headlock and then duct tapes him.
Yeah.
We just hear the rip of the duct tape. We don't watch all of this happening. A lot of the monstrous acts performed by Joe are just heard or referenced to without us seeing every single detail. And now we get the big sequence of the rescue.
Yeah.
And it is filmed in a very interesting way.
Yeah, it's filmed through the security footage.
Yes.
Of the house. And it's cut in between every camera. So we don't get to stay with Joe as he's walking through the house on his killing spree.
Yeah, it's a grainy black and white CCTV photo.
Mm-hmm.
Joe, the shot changes like every 3 or 4 seconds.
Yeah.
And so what you get is like sometimes just empty corridors, sometimes like Joe enters from the edge of the screen and then it cuts, or sometimes it's Joe just leaving and then you just see there's a body behind him.
Yeah.
It's
really interesting.
He's a ghost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes you want to see it more, want to see the violence more, but I like that it doesn't show you the violence. Because
right.
What it shows you is horrifying because he's killing with a hammer, so it's already really brutal.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they show it gives it ambience.
Yeah, and should be noted, the audio mix during this, it's like an old-timey song, an old record that it kind of like loops when it cuts sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Just based on like if, I guess, the record is playing through the house, like it's at different parts.
Yeah, if it can be heard cameras, through that camera.
So that really adds to the dissonance in that scene.
Mm-hmm. It actually cuts from the security footage once we locate the girl. It's like this really shot. Yeah, it's a really blurry shot on her face, but you hear the counting that you heard in the beginning of the movie.
Voiceover.
So you're just like, this is the girl that we're looking for. That's the cue right there.
Eyes closed, voiceover of her counting down. Eventually, she opens her eyes and we see her pupils are super dilated.
Yeah, she's drugged.
Yeah.
We learn why she's counting down when Joe enters the room and a guy comes out.
Yes.
And he kills that guy.
Yeah.
The guy's naked. Mm-hmm. So this guy was doing something to her and she was counting down.
Rape.
Yeah. He was raping her. And she was counting down as a way to cope, as a way to like go somewhere else while it was happening to her. And by the time she counts down, it'd be over.
Yeah. He grabs Nina on his back, carries her. But then there's another guy he has to take out. So he puts her down, tells her to close her eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And the camera lingers just on Nina's face. She did not listen to Joe.
No.
Her eyes wide open. We hear Joe doing his thing with the hammer and the guy. But we just see Nina watching it.
He lets Scott out of the car.
Mm-hmm.
Scott's still alive. Just duct taped.
Yeah.
We get this really like artsy, rainy drive.
Yeah, I wrote down this shot because it's like definitely a trope of characters in movies gazing outside of windows.
Yeah. At the rain, like, and she's like tracing with her finger.
It's usually like on a train and sometimes it's a car.
Yeah.
But I like the shot. The camera's on the outside of the car, so you see the person through the glass.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like already kind of obscured.
Mm-hmm.
It being the city. There's at nighttime, there's lots of lights and the rain definitely affects that.
Mm-hmm.
And she's still counting down in her head.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah.
Then they're still in the car, but now parked in a parking garage.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe offers her a soda or water. She doesn't take it. Instead, she just hugs Joe.
Yeah.
And then starts to kiss him. But he tells her that she doesn't have to do that. Kind of pushes her off of him. Mm-hmm. Not in a violent way, but Nina doesn't really know what's going on. So Joe explains, I'm taking you back to your father. One point, Nina has to pee.
Mm-hmm.
So she just pees in the parking garage
mm-hmm.
while Joe's just waiting. Nina is like fidgeting with everything in the car. So she grabs the pill bottle.
Yeah.
She's shaking the pills, but he takes it away from her.
Mm-hmm.
She's, I don't know how old, but like, I want to say like 12 or 11.
Yeah. Right, like 12.
Very young. It is troubling.
Mm-hmm. They get a motel room, right? Yeah, this is where they kind of meet.
You see the desk clerk just listening to his iPod and eating French fries.
Yeah.
And they get the room. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is where they're going to meet. Well, this is where Lotto told mm-hmm. them to be.
Yeah.
To meet. But something happens, something out of the ordinary from the plan.
Sure. Yeah. While they're waiting, Joe flicks on the TV. And it is news footage
mm-hmm.
of State Senator Votto jumped off a hotel. He was running for governor.
Mm-hmm.
Same kind of thing as a blowout as a governor that was going to be running for president, but yeah. He's killed. So yeah, they were going to be handing her off to her dad, but he has supposedly jumped off a building, though it is heavily implied that he was thrown.
Yeah.
Because you can't trust people.
Nope.
And there's a knock on the door, and it's the guy from the desk. But right when Joe opens the door and sees the guy from the desk, the guy from the desk is shot from some guy that's standing behind him.
Yeah.
So the blood splatters all over Joe's face.
All over his face. And
it's the cops.
It's the cops. Yeah, it's revealed it's the cops, and they enter the room and pretty much take charge of the situation.
Yeah, one of them grabs Nina right away. You just mm-hmm. get the shot. There's another feet. It's not like Tarantino feet shots, but it's just like the legs and feet. Like in the flashback, you just see like Nina's got like stockings on and you just see the feet dangling while she's being picked up by this cop, kind of carried out of the room very quickly
mm-hmm.
while the second cop stays by for a fight.
Yeah.
I guess he's supposed to kill Joe.
Yeah, he's supposed to finish the job, but Joe's really good at his job, and they tussle for a bit, but Joe is able to get the cop into a chokehold,
mm-hmm.
and he chokes his ass out.
Yes, and then we get another trope in quote-unquote serious films, where you get the reflection through a broken mirror.
Yeah.
You know, to show that their psyche is all fractured.
Yeah.
And I make fun of it, but I like it. It was definitely forced in this one. I don't know a lot of I guess it's like a sex thing, right? To have the mirror on the ceiling.
Yeah.
So maybe that does work.
It's actually in a skeezy motel.
Yeah. So yeah. In the fight, like at one point, the mirror in the ceiling gets hit. So the glass is falling and it's broken. And we mm-hmm. see, because none of the violence Joe commits is like clearly framed or shot.
Yeah.
But we can tell from the reflection that he is killing the cop.
Mm-hmm. There's also this crazy drum sound, like, after he kills him.
Yeah.
That I heard, that I was just like, ooh, that was really good. Joe was, he was shot in the mouth, or he was hit? Like, what?
I think he was shot in the
cheek?
Was it the mouth?
Something happened to his mouth, because he pulls his tooth out.
Right. He was hit. He was hit in the mouth.
Okay. All
right, these details don't matter too much. But yeah, he's pulling out a bullet.
Okay.
And we just get close up on this blood dripping down his big beard.
Mm-hmm.
And then he finds another payphone.
Yeah. Gives John a call.
Goes right to the message. No answer.
Mm-hmm.
Leaves very quick message. Pick up what happened.
Mm-hmm.
We get voiceover of Joe making another attempt. But then we just see the sun rising and Joe's riding a cab over the bridge again. Want to mention the bridge shots. In a lot of movies, New York and like other cities, San Francisco definitely comes to mind. You get these sweeping shots when characters are traversing over bridges. You see the skyline and the body of water that they're going over, and it's usually like filmed in the golden hour, so the light is very crisp. This shot of Joe riding a cab across the bridge is super obscured. You don't see much of the buildings because of the angle the camera's at. You just see like the iron or whatever, the steel that the bridge is made out of, just the columns and stuff passing by, kind of covering any view that would be nice to look at. And it's just loud.
It's just, it is loud.
Yeah. Just the car sounds are just loud and unlike what we're used to.
So John's not picking up. So he heads to his actual home. Where he's very cautious. He's very aware that, you know, people tried to kill him, so why wouldn't they come to his house, right? So he's just being very cautious. When he gets in the house, he picks up a knife. He's like tiptoeing around.
Yeah, you get the sound of the coffee maker bubbling because no one attended to it.
Yeah, and he just leaves it. He leaves it there because if he turns it off, it's a sound cue. Right?
Joe pulls a gun from the drawer. I guess he knew where McCleary kept his gun. And then we get a cat.
Yeah.
Forgot about this cat. It's a nice gray cat. Much like Joe, it's also got lots of whiskers. And in a moment of quiet, Joe is just sitting on a couch, petting this cat, asking, "Where's your papa?"
All right. He does find John. He finds him at his office.
He finds John's keys on the counter. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Grabs them, takes John's car, drives to his office. In the elevator on the way up, we get the first substantial Joe's childhood flashback. He's just riding in the elevator, but now we get a flashback as Joe as a child hiding in the closet from what we can hear is his father verbally and physically abusing his mother.
Yeah.
And Joe's just in the closet hiding, counting.
With his head in a bag, does that happen yet?
Not yet.
Not yet, okay.
I need the next shot. But, okay. But yeah, this is... Joe's been doing this shit all his life.
Yeah. It's a coping mechanism.
This was how he was raised.
It's how he escapes.
Yeah. Yeah, McCleary's dead.
Yeah. He's been killed.
So I guess he'll never get to go out on that boat.
Nope. It's not happening.
I bring up all this like cliche stuff that's in the movie, but that's just a lot of genre stuff, and I guess some of the shots. I don't know. I'm not trying to detract from it. There's a reason cliches exist.
When he's in the office, he gives Angel a call.
Yeah, he sees Angel's number from the Rolodex is out on the office as if...
Someone was looking for it.
Yeah. So he calls... And, yeah, in most movies, when one character a lot of times calls another one, you then get the shot of that person picking up the phone. Yeah. So we do cut to the bodega that Angel and his son work at, but we just hear the phone ringing.
Yeah.
And we just have close-ups of their faces and the sound of a gun being cocked.
Yeah. So they're next, both of them.
And Joe is very concerned because he knows that they now know where he lives. So it's time for Joe to rush home to where he lives because his mother also lives there.
Yeah, his mom is there. And
or dies there.
He's spiraling a little and he's kind of like freaking out and he's kind of swerving. He's trying to get around everyone.
Yeah. Very erratic driving. He rushes home and he sneaks around. We get to see him sneaking around with close-ups of his boots. Walking very slowly on the carpet, and then you get more flashbacks of when he was a child and had to, like, sneak around his house to maneuver to, like, hide from his father. And he makes it to his mother's bedroom.
Yeah.
And wanna set the scene?
Yeah, he walks in to see his mother laying on the bed, but there's a pillow on her head. And at first you're like, oh, she was smothered. But then you notice that there's a bullet hole in the pillow.
Yeah, the pillow. I have seen this in some action movies where someone grabs like a pillow to you. You shoot through the pillow and that silences the gunshot.
Yeah, it's like a pillow, or sometimes people use like a potato.
Right.
Yeah, to silence it.
Yeah.
He removes the pillow to look at her face, and she was shot through the
through the glasses. He takes off her glasses. You get another broken glass shot. This time, the lens of his mother's glasses broken and bloody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Joe's mom's dead.
Yeah. And but the killers, they're still there.
Yeah, they make a sound of rifling downstairs. So Joe does some more sneaking. And a little flashback of Baby Joe calling for his mom and his mom shushing him.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the flashback where you be like, so yeah, he knows how to sneak around this house.
Yeah, he knows how to sneak around.
And he knows every angle of the house because very easily, like from around the corner, is able, just from hearing where they are, two shots, one for each guy.
Yeah.
Two hits.
Perfect. And he's able to kill one of them and injure the other one in a way that incapacitates him from being a threat.
And so now he can get some information.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy is shot on the floor of the kitchen. Joe walks in, grabs some... The man's just on the ground, like trying to crawl somewhere.
Crawl away.
Joe like kicks it. Gives him like a little kick, like, where are you
going? Yeah, where are you going?
You're not going to get anywhere. And Joe fills up a glass of water, takes like one sip, I think, but then just starts spilling it.
Yeah, on his head.
Yeah, some water torture.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe asks, who killed his mom? Was it you? Was it the other guy? Who are you working for?
Mm-hmm.
The man's not really helping out.
Yeah.
So first, Joe's like slapping him a little bit, but then he ends up giving him one of his pills.
Mm-hmm. To help him calm down.
Pain, to help him die peacefully.
Yeah.
As peacefully as a man who's just been shot and is about to die can die.
Right. There's something like so beautiful about this scene. It's weird. It's weirdly human.
Yeah.
Very like oddly beautiful. Because you'd think he would just thrash this man,
mm-hmm.
whether he was the one that pulled the trigger or not. His mom is dead.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You can only, you know, imagine what that would feel like, and to have the person right in front of you. But, he kind of like, coddles him.
Yeah.
And lays down with him.
Yeah, this is after he gets the information he wants, though.
Mm-hmm.
He's a little rough until he gets the information, then is, I don't want to say humane, because he shot that guy.
Yeah.
But that guy shot his mom.
Exactly.
It's tricky in this genre.
Mm-hmm.
Dynamics. But he gets some quick answers, and this whole backstory of, like, what really happened, why the job went wrong, is just kind of glossed over.
Mm-hmm.
The book goes into it only a little bit more. The book's also very short. But essentially, it was Governor Williams,
mm-hmm.
the Votto's competition. Or maybe... They don't go into detail. Maybe it wasn't a competition. Maybe it was a guy whose seat Votto was going to be taking.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Apparently, Nina was the governor's favorite. And also, the man being interrogated mutters that they traded her. Votto wanted out. And that's all we hear. In the book, it goes into a little more detail.
Mm-hmm.
Politics and organized crime are very closely related,
mm-hmm.
historically, and in this movie. The gangsters take the senatorial hopeful take his daughter,
mm-hmm.
as like collateral or something. She has to help them make money. Right. He sold out his own girl.
Yeah, he pimped her out.
He wanted out of that arrangement, so he sends Joe to save her.
Right.
But they find out. They get to him. Now his wife's suicide that was mentioned earlier makes a little more sense.
Right.
Pretty ugly stuff.
Yeah.
So Joe got the information. He knows Governor Williams set it all up. And then we get this moment you're calling beautiful.
Yeah, it is. It's so, because it's so, yeah, it's, I've never seen something like this in a film before.
Right.
You know, it should be really violent. This scene should be really violent, should be really sad. And it is sad, but it's a different kind of sad. It's not angry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he lays there with this man, and there's this song playing on the radio. There's a lot of radio in this, in this picture. And the guy dying starts to sing, and Joe joins him. And
so they hold hands.
And they hold hands.
Yeah.
And they're singing and they're holding hands, and then the man stops singing and he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
And he dies very peacefully and very comforted by Joe.
Yeah. And now we get a sequence that is also quite beautiful.
Yeah, it's even more beautiful than what we were just talking about. Yeah, it takes it up a notch.
We get to get out of the city for a second.
Mm-hmm.
At a lake. It's in the daytime. It's a very gorgeous setting.
Mm-hmm.
Joe's got his mother, his dead mother, in a tarp wrapped up. And he's going to give her a water burial.
Yeah.
And also himself. He's filling his pockets with rocks.
Yeah.
So that he will sink to the bottom of the lake with his dead mother.
Yeah.
His mother was the only reason he had to live.
Mm-hmm.
Now he doesn't have that.
Yeah.
So he's finally going to go through with his suicide.
Yeah.
They descend into the water. You get the shot of the surface of the lake, the bubbles coming up. I like that. And then you get some underwater footage of the body. It's very, this came out after, very Shape of Water. Mm-hmm. That,
the
figure image underwater floating. I mean, it has different meaning in this movie.
Mm-hmm. It's very, symbolic of him, like, sinking with his mother and then letting go of that and, like, letting that weight go.
He does so because then we get some more voiceover of the counting, and he sees Nina as his mom. He sees his mom as Nina. And now he has another reason. He's reminded of some business he wants to take care of before he's done with his life. So, yeah, he removes the rocks from his pockets and floats back up to the surface. And then... if this were a comedy, this part would be played much different. But there's just the shot of Joe. He is the burial for his mom. He's in a suit and tie. But then you get the shot afterwards. He's soaked, just walking on gravel away from this lake. And you get the sound is so perfect. It's that sound when you have like wet socks.
Yeah. And it's like,
it's the slushing and he's walking on the gravel. Yeah. No one. I don't know. It's such an icky feeling, having wet socks.
Yeah, I hate it. It's the worst.
Probably not as bad as having wet socks after you just buried your mom and attempted suicide for the who knows how many times. So now, like Travis Bickle, Joe is going to be staking out this politician's campaign office.
It's a mansion.
Well, first he's in the city staking out the office. Then he sees the guys leave the office, and he follows the car to the country home of Governor Williams, the mansion. Some interesting, in the car ride over, some interesting cutting, like, of the road. I don't really know how to describe it, but it's definitely untraditional, the way it's edited. Just where the cut is.
Right.
I don't know.
This,
And then we do, like, the security camera effect again, but for the new environment.
This, I was going to say, this picture does like car scenes very well. And it made me think of another movie that had terrible like car scenes. It's Proud Mary.
Oh, I haven't seen that. I'm not going to.
It's okay.
It's considered one of the worst of last year.
Yeah, it wasn't great, and it had too many car scenes of her driving, and it was just done in the worst
I'm sure that it's very loud music from the soundtrack blasting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just like the same cut again. But this one did it very interestingly.
It should be noted that Joe has been awake this whole time.
Mm-hmm.
It's daytime now.
Yeah.
He was up all night the night before. Yeah.
Yeah.
He...
Man don't sleep.
So he's driving on very little sleep. It kind of just the editing traces his being.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's not the black and white grainy security footage. And I'm not sure if it's implied that it's the security cameras in this mansion, mm-hmm. or if it's just the way it's filmed, because now it's in color and it's HD.
Right.
But it's the same effect of Joe first just like walking along like the very edge of the lawn up to the mansion. And mm-hmm. then we see the different rooms and Joe making his way around looking for... his target.
Yeah. Looking for Nina. He kills a few people.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You see, it's like before, you see a guy's foot just laying there, someone that he already got to.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't see. He's walking past. And then he actually gets to the room, right?
Gets to the bedroom and he finds Governor Williams.
Mm-hmm. He's already dead.
The only thing is, his throat is slit.
Yeah.
His shirt is off.
Mm-hmm.
Looked like maybe his throat was slit in the middle of rape.
Yeah.
And this causes Joe to break down. I mean, it was like he was going to kill himself, but then he was like, no, I should kill this guy.
Right.
Who's covering up this whole child sex trafficking ring.
Mm-hmm.
And... yeah, Joe breaks down. He, for some reason, rips off his own shirt.
Yeah.
Hands over his face, just bawling.
Mm-hmm.
Then, eventually gets up, walks around, gets to the dining room, where Nina is sitting at the table.
Yeah.
Eating peas and carrots with just a bloody straight razor right next to her.
Yeah, her hands are bloody, mm-hmm. and she's eating with her hands.
And she tells Joe it's okay.
Yeah.
It's not... I love that he... I mean, he, I guess, does a rescue attempt in the beginning of the movie, but this very much isn't man saves young girl.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, they're both fucked.
Yeah, they're both, like, very damaged people.
Yeah, and she saved herself.
Yeah.
She murdered her abuser.
She murdered her abuser, and I think she got the idea from watching him kill earlier.
Yeah.
She said, oh, I can kill? And that's what she did, yeah.
So now Joe and Nina are at a diner.
Yeah.
Drinking milkshakes.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, they have no idea what to do or where to go.
Yeah.
He's like, I'll go, I'll take you wherever you want to go. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I don't know. And then she gets up and, like, runs away.
She gets up and, yeah, and then... The volume of, like, the ambient noise of the diner, just, like, people chatting and, like, dishes being bussed, like, it increases.
Yeah, it's all you can hear.
To a point where it's all you can hear is different conversations. I've been in some diners like that where the acoustics are just terrible,
mm-hmm.
and you just can't hear the person right across from you because all you can hear is stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's not the acoustics of that place. It's Joe's head.
Yeah, we're in his head again.
He's going to do something about us being in his head.
Yeah.
Because he pulls out a gun, puts it under his chin, and shoots himself in the head.
He shoots himself in the head, and there's no change to the audio.
No one notices.
No one notices. Everyone continues with their conversation as if nothing happened.
Joe's head is like down on the table, mm-hmm. as one's head would be after shooting themselves while sitting at in a diner booth. My favorite thing, which is kind of comedic, maybe, the waitress passes Joe and drops the check into the pool of blood.
Yeah.
And then says, have a nice day.
Have a nice day.
While Joe's just lying there dead and like the check gets all bloody.
Right.
But then Nina puts her hand on Joe's face and says,
it's a beautiful day.
Yeah.
She said, let's go outside. It's a beautiful day.
Yeah, so he had not shot himself. Yeah. He was knocked out. He hadn't slept in however many days, hours. And
yeah, she didn't run away. Yeah, she came back. She
probably went to the bathroom or something. Because if there's anything we know about Nina, it's that occasionally she has to use the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
We did, you know, from earlier.
Right.
Yeah, she says, let's go. It's a beautiful day. He repeats, it's a beautiful day. Then he, his milkshake is pretty much done, but he's doing that thing where you slurp the bottom of it and it makes that sound. That's like the last thing we hear in the movie. It's just slurping what little remains of the milkshake, kind of like the little itty bit of reason he feels to be alive. The little bits of joy you can have, maybe. Milkshakes. And it cuts to black.
It's the perfect sound to cut to black on because you feel it coming.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
But then it comes back.
Yeah.
Back on the same shot of the diner booth, but now Joe and Nina are not there.
Yeah.
Perhaps they were never really there.
Mm-hmm.
Like the title. And the credits roll over the...
empty seats.
Empty seats with empty milkshake glasses on the table and just the mess they left behind.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like how a lot of Joe's actions were just left with the aftermath of the mess left behind.
Yeah. I like the way they did that and what that symbolizes in the title. Because, like, yeah, you were never really here. So
yeah, nothing he
somewhere he they did, just were.
Nothing he did matters.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, there's, like, dumb people online being like, the whole movie is just a fantasy in his head. Saying it right there. There's, like, this whole corner of the internet that where, like, every movie, they think there's, like, things that it's, like, not real.
Oh, yeah.
Spoiler, most fiction movies aren't real, or all fiction isn't real.
Mm-hmm.
It's people not being able to understand subtext.
Right.
Or just being spoiled by what?
Inception
or some bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were never really here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's the whole shebang.
And, okay, we just talked about it under 89 minutes. I was a little concerned.
Oh.
It seemed like one of those movies where we just going over the plot would take longer than watching the actual movie because of how effectively, information. I guess if I keep talking, we can exceed 89 minutes. Is it a movie or a film?
You Were Never Really Here is a film.
Yeah, I think anyone could have guessed listening to that conversation that we would both classify it as a film.
I don't think we're ever going to do Taken, but this is the film version of Taken.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where the director really... really had, like, an eye, really had, like, a hand, really just, like, held the camera a little longer, you know what I mean? Like, really made, like, really strong choices.
Or quicker. Like, in the security cam scene where it cuts before the character leaves the frame.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of time, for me, a film relies on what the director does, you know what I mean? If the director is making a film or a movie, relies a lot on what we see, how it's shown to us. And I think this is presented in a very filmy way.
Yes, I agree.
Nice.
We will be back next week, I think, with a guest.
I think.
Hopefully.
We'll see.
Will we do a different movie if he can't make it?
Maybe.
Oh, okay.
We could do that. We could hold on to it.
All right. We'll see.
Yeah.
Hopefully it works out. Hopefully you can find us on YouTube next week to watch us again with a guest. Till then, you can check out at Movie Film Pod on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Email us moviefilmpod@gmail.com. Rate, review, subscribe.
Yes.
Whoever gave us, what was it, half a star?
I think it was just one star.
A one star?
So we
really messed up
star.
Our average because we don't have that many ratings. Right. So please help us out so people can easily find our podcast when trying to look for new movie or film podcasts to listen to.
All right. I wish they would have left a review.
I mean, I feel like it's probably like the concept of our podcast is really stupid. And they probably played it and heard me say, it's a podcast where we pick a flick and decide if it's a movie or film. And they're like, what the fuck is this?
One star.
Anywho, we'll be back next week on movie.
Film.